And happy Monday to you.
Yeah!
Don't worry about it. I'm sure it's nothing. When I lived in, I shouldn't mention the city. There was another city that I lived in, however, where the radio corporation that I worked for had to pay out, I believe, a huge cash settlement to a bunch of people who lived underneath one of their broadcast towers. It was like the kids all had five heads and heard little secret messages beaming into their brain. And it was, you always hear those urban legends in radio. Most of the time, they are urban legends about people who pick up the radio station, their braces or their fillings or something. But there was this radio station I worked for. It was actually the sister station. But it was this huge 50,000-watt transmitter that just pounded down on this residential community, which had been built right underneath the tower. Or the tower had been built right above the community. I'm unsure about which one it was. But it's like, but you would always hear these stories about it. People had the station coming out of the doorknobs. People had the, like their toaster, the microwave. You would just open the microwave door, and there's George Jones.
910-KQZ.
Just coming out of it. And there's some huge study that came out later about, you know, why are my children glowing in the dark? Why is my son's skin sloughing away? Huge. And it was just because they lived right underneath the tower.
That's what happened to me. I lived in North Hollywood, about a block from KMPC, which is 50,000 watts on 710. And I used to hear the music of your life coming out of everything in my apartment.
Everything metal in your house. Yep. We start the radio.
Three towers.
Well, we used to get calls occasionally. Why am I getting country music coming out of my doorbell?
So there you go.
Anyway. We were just speculating that working in radio gives you cancer. So there you go. So think about that. It's like the Cisco where you hold a cell phone up to your head 10 hours a day and then suddenly you got a huge tumor the size of a ham growing out of the side of your ear. I mean, think about how much electronic, radioactive, what's it? That you're saturated with it every single moment you're sitting in here. at least you're not one of the engineers out there having to climb a tower to change a light at 3 in the morning up there getting your scrotum radiated.
Those guys are crazy.
Oh, there's no way. Not enough money in the world. Are you kidding me? Jesus. Not another than a million years. Look, we need you to climb 10,000 feet off the ground on this thing that radiates 50,000 watts worth of power. It's completely safe. There's no way in which it's harmful. Here, balance this light bulb in your teeth. All right. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 3 minutes and 5 seconds after the hour 11 in this month of November, in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. It is Monday, and welcome to day 12. Thank you for coming along. All right, we'll get to a whole bunch of stuff today, and I'm unclear about how to even introduce him now. I got a, we'll let him explain it. I got a phone call about 5 minutes. And phone calls, if 5 minutes before, typically I don't even answer my phone. There is this window of time starting at about 10:30 where I just quit answering my phone. I don't, because then I'm in show mode. There is pre-show mode, and then there's show mode, and then there's post-show mode. Typically 10:30 is when pre-show mode is becoming show mode. And I just don't interact with anybody because it's always going to be bad news. And it's like answering the phone 5 minutes before the show is like answering the phone at 3 a.m. It's always going to be something that it's just going to be, you know, what happened? Well, your house is on fire and all your possessions are gone. Well, you know what? If that's the case now, that's going to be the case at 3:07. Doesn't matter. But, all right. Well, let me just play part of this here. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show.
A postman is the person in your neighborhood.
And there we go. We'll just stop it right there.
Way
for
to go,
today.
Champ.
Well, I don't wish to demean. Let's welcome Rick Emerson, the stenographer, mailman Chris. Hello, sir.
How are you?
I'm okay. How's your day going?
Oh, I've had better days.
All right. So are you allowed to relay to me what you hear on the air, what you relayed to me earlier?
Yeah, I can dance around it. You know, it's come to the attention of some individual that I'm spending a amount of time on radio every day.
You're spending a healthy portion of your workday conversing with a Portland DJ.
No, those are his breaks and his lunch.
Well, see, and it's been that way. Unfortunately, my break time's kind of shifting, my lunchtime.
Uh-huh.
With the Christmas season underway.
Yes.
So, especially now that, you know, with the 11 o'clock start versus the 12 o'clock start, it has become more likely that I'm doing this when I'm not on my actual lunch break.
Now, here's the thing, is that I have, there's a great number of delivery people who listen to this program, and it includes any number of postal carriers. Now, there's two things. And I don't wish to get anybody in further trouble. But I had several postal carriers email me. And this is, see, this is sort of, this becomes like peeling an onion. Because they were emailing me to tell me two things. One of them, one of the emails I got last week, the subject line was just, Mailman Chris will get his ass in a sling eventually. The second email was from a guy who told me that postal carriers are actually forbidden to listen to the radio while they work. And that he then went on to describe various things you'd said over the last week that were going to get you in trouble. The irony, of course, being that he was a postal worker who clearly only knew about this because he himself was listening to the radio as he went through his day.
Yeah. and technically, there's no rule that says we can't listen to the radio.
Uh-huh.
We're not supposed to be driving because it would be a violation to be driving with a headphones on.
Well, no, that would be wrong. Do your postal trucks not have radios in them?
Postal trucks don't have radios in them.
What kind of inhumane work environment is that?
Even better, they have special vans made.
How can one stay informed of the latest road conditions?
Seriously.
In stormy conditions.
How are you supposed to know about the condition of the road that you rely on to travel upon to deliver the post to the people?
Open your eyes and look out the window.
Well, we do have an experienced traffic reporter in the room.
That's why I'm saying.
We can incorporate some traffic into the day-to-day broadcast, Chris, if you can listen because of that.
I'm just saying this is a point to bring up to your superiors, that you need to listen to the radio so that you can more effectively deliver posts to the people by dint of knowing what the road conditions are going to be. Do you at least have heaters or something in your truck?
Yeah, they have heaters.
All right, okay. So... anyway, so you said there were two levels of, there were sort of two levels of discussion that happened between you and your superior.
Oh, yeah, because it's been noted to other, you know, like other carriers listen, and they all, you know, they're all good about it, but there's been some supervisors that have caught the show, and the fact
Hello.
I might be listening, or might be making the phone call when I'm not on my lunch, for anyone who's listening right now, I am actually on my lunch right now, The other thing was the opener, the sounder.
A postman is the person in your neighborhood.
This? It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that could rub anybody the wrong way.
Yeah, I guess the official word is that would be considered demeaning.
So if it was brought to their attention, then obviously these postal workers who are telling you can't listen are listening themselves.
And we'd like to say hello to you now.
Hello.
Hello, how are you? So, greetings and salutations from We at the Rick Emerson Show to all of Chris's supervisors. We are glad to count you among our many listeners. All right. So how are we going to... Well, so there's two things. A, so are you going to be able to continue in this? Because not that we're trying to give you the bum's rush.
What if we get rid of the sounder?
Well, now that I mentioned to Rick, I said, well, you know, that gives Scotty just all that more opportunity for more production.
Scotty, can you take the Mailman Chris sounder and replace... We'll keep the first half... The postman's a person in your neighborhood, but just replace them...
With harps or something.
Tweeting birds.
Replace the machine gun fire with something less lethal.
Something harpy.
Children laughing.
Yes, exactly. The sound of kittens playing with balls of string and unicorns running down rainbows.
Well, I don't know about kittens. They're not in a cooler.
Scotty, did you... The sound of razor blades being unpackaged. Scotty, you didn't make that sounder, though, did you? Didn't some guy send that to us? That was a guy you didn't make. That was listener submitted. It's way too simple. You did the machine gun? Well, congratulations. Apparently it had the design. It did catch the attention of people in the audience. All right. Well, you'll have to make it. You'll have to edit it into something else. So just replace the machine gun with something less killy.
You can keep the sounder, you know, a revised sounder. The problem, I guess, the problem that lies is that I either have to, you know, take my break very early in my day, take actual lunch break very early in the day, and make it a point of, you know, hey, I am actually on my lunch.
Right.
Or, you know, I can. You can do the show opener. You can list everything. I can jot it down. I can continue about my day working like normal and call you on my actual break at 3:00. And recap everything for you.
Well, now let me ask you this: Is it going to cramp your style to be coming on today? To be coming on at 11:00 in the morning? Is that going to screw up your day?
Yeah, it might. simply because there are days that I don't leave the station until 10:30, and it's hard to justify leaving at 10:30 and jumping on a lunch break at 11.
This 20 minutes of work has exhausted me. I must now recuperate. Well, here's the thing. Obviously, we're not trying to get rid of you because we, you know, you are the one who's sort of made this your own. But by the same token, I mean,
well, we never really get anything in the first hour anyway. So could we have him call before noon?
Well,
like closer to noon.
We do get to things in the first. We get to like Lisa Goddard.
We get to you
in
like
the first hour.
Yeah, like blubbering over Lisa Goddard. and like what funny thing Max did the night before.
Then
we break.
That has its place in this great big kooky radio program of ours. Because here are our options. Our options are for you to come out at 11 o'clock, which doesn't really seem like it's going to be viable. The options are to have one person come on at 11 and then have you recap at 3, which is, I don't know, sort of interesting. And that would give us a redundancy plan. That would give us a little bit of redundancy so that if like you're not able to call in someday, or the other person able to call in, we've got somebody who can sort of, you know, somebody who can pick up the slack. We're dividing the job among two different people. Or just to sort of move on to having somebody else do it all together. Because I do think that it's beneficial for the show at this point. I wouldn't want to drop it. But
it's definitely, and it's one thing that I think you've done that I don't recall any other FM station stealing that bit yet.
No, it's true. And I will say that I don't get to everything every day, but I will say that I believe it's had a positive effect. I think it's had a beneficial effect on the radio program. I don't get to everything, but I think I get to more now with this. Not necessarily because I do all the stuff because I'm afraid of the push-up punishment, but I think it makes me scaled. I think the result of this push-up thing has been that I've scaled down the amount of things that I tease every day. So
what if we give a supervisor some options to choose from?
Yeah, can we? What's your supervisor number? We'll approach him with a number of scenarios that he can select from.
Let's not say we did.
Well, I'm just saying that is, you know, Rick Emerson is willing to go the extra mile and talk to your supervisor for you. We have a stellar track record of interceding on behalf of employees with management. So
I think if we could find someone that wanted to call in at 11 that wanted to help out, That would be great.
Ideally, it should be another delivery person, somebody else who is on the road, in the car, in their truck, out there working around during the show.
And it's got to be someone who listens every day. That's the thing. You got to listen to every minute every day.
It has to be a P1. It has to be somebody who is a devoted listener. All right.
Because
otherwise,
it doesn't do any good for someone to write the stuff down and then say, "Well, I didn't hear 3 hours of the 4-hour show, so I don't know why this."
Hey, I know that Aaron listens. At least, I think he listens to the whole show, doesn't he?
I'm unclear about that.
Because he always sends me emails and text messages, so I'm pretty sure he's listening every day.
See, but that's the thing. I mean, but now we enter this weird gray area of, I don't know who listens and who doesn't and whose superiors don't think they listen, and is he able to call it? I don't even really know what Aaron does right now. And Aaron Geek in the City has had like 9 different jobs since I've known him. He was like selling insurance or something for a while, or then he was like working for some car place, and then he was working for the city, and then he was just suckling off the state. I'm not even really sure what he does right now. That is a possibility. Is he online? Are you messaging with him? Sarah?
Oh, no, not yet. Not right now.
Okay.
I was reading about Lindsay Lohan and her drug problem.
Right. Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll find out. We'll see if we can pursue somebody else.
We'll take a couple days. We'll work on this, and I'll take my lunch break at 11 o'clock every day for anyone who's listening. until further notice.
Right. Don't taunt them, Chris. I don't want you to get in trouble.
Seriously, I'll feel really bad. I'd feel really bad about this. So, I'll tell you. Well, we'll make it our goal by the end of the week to find somebody to handle the first half of the show, stenography wise.
Okay.
All right. All right.
If there's anyone that can help me out tomorrow is another day because it's my day off, but unfortunately I have a doctor's appointment at 2 o'clock. So.
All right. Well, we'll see if we can find somebody by the end of the week to do the first half of the scenario, to do the 11 o'clock check-in.
Scotty can do a production sounder for the contest, the bit to find someone.
Oh, don't prompt him to make more sound effects. I mean, it really is, he doesn't need any prompting on that subject. Really, he just doesn't.
I think he
even
needs to make more sound effects and less taking clips from the shows that make us sound like we're saying something bad.
Seriously, I would play one of those right now, except I'm not able to load the Cartomatic software. Yeah, I know. We're all broken up about it. All right. Well, here's what we're going to get through today. This is what is on the agenda today, Mailman Chris. Mel Gibson thanks his lucky stars for the Seinfeld curse. We help a guy punish his brother Seriously, we will do that today. We have, let's see, we're going to talk about the world's largest blank of blank. We're going to try to figure out what we're going to... Because we had this whole thing which occurred to me on Friday, and I'm not even clear why. Oh, it's because there was that guy with the giant ball of rubber bands. So everything else, but the ball of rubber bands has been done. World's largest ball of twine, largest ball of gum, largest ball of aluminum foil, largest pile of blank. So we're going to try to come up with the world's largest blank of blank. I just don't know what it is. Yeah, because we have... we have divined that that is the way to positive media coverage of this very fine radio program, is to assemble the world's largest something of something. So we will help you, we will have you weigh in with that. So you got to fill in the blank for this today. The world's largest blank of blank. And we read the Inquirer, so you don't have to. Plus, Lisa Goddard will join us, Clive Lewis, and our good friend Jim Roop from Los Angeles. That's what we've got today.
All right, Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, Clive Lewis. Plus, we will do the Seinfeld curse, punish listener's brother, and reading the Inquirer, and the blank of blank.
That is exactly what we will get for today, my friend.
Did you get my ID I sent you on Friday?
I don't know. What was
it? It was stealing a little something from Borat. We can make the largest donation to Locks of Love, but we'll do it with Borat style, the hair of the pubis.
Okay. I'd like again to say hello to your supervisors who may be listening as you suggest creating a huge bag of pubic hair to give to someone.
We might not be in the lunch hour, but I'm on my lunch.
That makes everything okay. All right. So that's no. No, no is the answer to that. So,
no.
There you go. All right, we will check with you at the end of the program. Try not to get fired today.
We'll do.
All right, there you go. Mailman Chris, ladies and gentlemen. All right. 503-733-2970. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you?
I'm good. I went to Bremerton this weekend.
How exciting.
It was, especially since it was...
A crane crashed on somebody up there.
Really?
A crane? Like the kind that they build up buildings with?
Mm-hmm.
I always wonder why those... Do you ever see a crane lifting something and you think, like, your brain doesn't understand the physics of it, how it can possibly stay upright?
Mm-hmm.
I always expect when I see it carrying up a huge block of cement or something, you wonder how wide the base would possibly have to be for it to not fall over. And I'm always thinking that one of these days I'm going to be watching it and it's just going to plummet to the ground. And you're saying it happened in Bremerton?
Yeah. So one of those B-towns up there.
Yeah.
Hmm. Bellevue? Could have been Bremerton, Bellevue.
All right.
Yeah, what was even more fun is that I woke up and it was pouring rain and my car is having an electrical problem. Well, my sister's car. So the windshield wipers don't work unless I have my high beams on. And then if I turn my... and then if I turn my blinker anyway, they shut off. And so I'm going 75 miles an hour on I-5, pouring rain, semis passing me.
Blinding everybody in the oncoming lane.
Yes, I'm blinding everyone, and then I keep forgetting that every time I use my blinker, the windshield wipers shut off, so I, like, change into another lane, and then my windshield wipers stop.
So let me understand this. So the only time you can't see the road in front of you is when you're changing lanes.
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then everyone thinks I'm a total jerk because I started changing lanes without using my blinker, and I got flipped off a few times.
Oh,
so I'm like, hey...
That's genius. Oh, man, I remember driving, and it was from Portland to Kennewick one time. I was driving to my high beams. It wasn't that my high beams were stuck on. It's that my regular headlights burned out, and the only lights I had were the high beams. And so it's fine on the highway, actually, because the large sections of the, like, if you're going through the gorge, there is no oncoming traffic. When you're driving through the gorge, it's all one way. So the only thing you have to worry about is when you're coming up behind some guy, and then they can do that weird thing where they flip the rearview mirror. They flip the bevel the other way in the rearview mirror. But then, of course, as soon as you get into, like, one of those small towns or a truck stop town or something, guys, you'll see this. Guys will be pulling in front of you or making a left turn where they have to pass you. And if they're in an SUV, it's fine because your headlights just hit, like, the door level. But if there's somebody in a car that's the same level as you and they go to make that left-hand turn in front of you, and it's right as they pull in front of the car, you see them look over and they throw up their arm like, you know, as though there's something attacking the car.
I felt really bad, but you've got to use them sometimes.
You're just scorching them with the high beams as they pull in front of you. I shouldn't laugh. It's dangerous, but goddamn, it's funny. Oh, good times. I didn't have... And so when you would... I don't understand this particular car you're driving.
Okay, so I couldn't...
So then when you turn on the...
So I lucked out on Saturday. I was thinking about this before I left because they haven't been working for a while. So Saturday was completely dry when I drove there. I'm like, okay, it's beautiful outside. I'm not going to have a problem. Woke up Sunday morning, downpour. So I finally talked to my dad. I'm like, there's something wrong with the windshield wipers. I could only get them to work, like, if you hit the side of them and it squirts the fluid on and they go a couple times. So I've been driving, like, hitting that thing every 2 seconds trying to get them to go. So then he found out that they only work with my high beams on, and then they shut off when...
I don't even understand what kind of electrical problem... Look, I don't know a lot about cars, but what kind of... That's like having, like, your garbage disposal only works if the washing machine happens to be running or something.
And then
it doesn't
today,
make any sense.
When it wasn't raining, I was every time I would use my blinker without my high beams on, my windshield wipers would go on.
That's fantastic.
I have the worst car ever.
Designed by Rube Goldberg. That's genius.
Yeah.
I don't want to get tied down on the stories about your car's electrical system. I will say this, though. This wasn't me, but this was my very first program director. He drove in Kennewick. He drove this clunker. And the windshield wipers, it's not that they didn't work, but they would only go down. They wouldn't go up. And so the deal is, he had this string that was hooked to the windshield wipers that would, he had tied a string around the base of the windshield wipers, and the string then went across the windshield, and so he could never roll the window up when it was raining, because he had to have one arm out the window around the string. And so when he was driving and it was raining, he would pull the string and the windshield wipers would pull up, then he'd let go and they go and go back down. And so he would have to, so he's there driving for the heavy rain, becoming saturated because the driver's side window is down, and he's relentlessly jerking on this string because the windshield wipers will only go down, not up. And he's the program director. Radio sucks. Oh, good times. All right, Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification.
Well, Louise Duard, who we made fun of, was actually the hit of the show.
We all feel terrible
Catholic sense of guilt over all the cruel things we said about this woman. She
deserved it? She deserved to be on that tour?
Oh, I have never seen a finer show in quite some time.
She was really good. Louise Duard, she was not the opener. See, we thought she was the opening act. Let's recap this a second. Let's tease the other news stories, and then we'll talk about Corman and Conway.
Well, there's somebody who said something worse than Mel Gibson. It's on YouTube, and that means he's toast. America prefers penguins to James Bond. An Oregon lottery winner is busted for meth and forgery. Brittany may just give away her sex tape for free.
Bada-bing.
For the children. And this is a Tom Cat free zone.
Fantastic.
Thank you. So is my website, Tim.
Yeah, we're tired of it.
I totally blacklisted it.
We will have no cruise news because you can't possibly use it. And there's nothing to report. They're married and she's off
and
to
a life.
And
they've already sold the pictures and screw them.
Yeah, I mean, she's off to a life of slavery. And they're inevitably going to get divorced, but it's going to be like in 5 years. And
after two kids.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not going to be soon enough for any of us to really find it interesting or entertaining in any way. So F it. So we're not going to talk to... it's like we used to have that alien free zone. So we have now a Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. It's a Tom Cat free zone.
Got it. You should make a sounder for that.
He's busy doing something. Yeah. So, all right. There you go. What else? Well, there's other stuff to get to, but we got to talk about the Corman Conway thing, because then, and then we got to take this call, and then we'll break, and then we got Lisa Goddard. But we thought that Louise Duard, see, so Friday, Tim and I went and emceed the Tim Conway Harvey Corman show at the Schnitzer.
Huge crowd.
Huge. I would say a sellout.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. I had no idea that place held so many people. How many did you say?
Close to 3,000. A little under that.
3,000, and it looked like a sellout to me.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like it was packed. And so we, on Friday, have been talking, because it was like Tim Conway, Harvey Korman, plus Louise Duard. And we had made fun, slightly, lightly, gently, in our way, of Louise Duard, because we're like, well, who the hell is she?
And it was our own ignorance that we didn't.
I really... And so we go there. We thought she was just going to be the opening act. But it wasn't. Louise Duard was the mortar between the bricks. She was the glue that held the show together. Not that Tim Conway and Harvey Korman were not great. They were. But she was really fantastic. And I got to say, first and foremost, I'm not a big fan of impressionists. Impersonations don't do a whole lot for me, typically speaking. But it occurred to me, actually, that I don't really think I've ever seen a female impressionist. Now that having seen her do her gig on Friday at Corman and Conway, I'm thinking about it now, and all the impressionists I've ever seen have been men. I don't think I've ever seen a woman do it. And she did the people you would never really expect. She did this great thing where she came out and did both Burns and Allen. She did George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Incredible.
It was incredible.
Did Cher?
Sure, Cher was
Barbara
really good.
Barbara Walters?
Yeah. No, it was great. She did the... God, who else did she do? She did the... She did Katharine Hepburn. She had this
perfect.
Katharine Hepburn was astonishing. It was Katharine Hepburn as a stand. It was Louise Duard doing Katharine Hepburn as though Katharine Hepburn were doing stand up in the Catskills. which is, and I'm not going to sit and try to recreate her act because it wouldn't be the point, but it was really funny because, you know, because she's doing the whole, like, because when is Katharine Hepburn had the Parkinson's or whatever?
Yeah.
And so she's like, what if Katharine Hepburn was a stand-up comic? And, you know, and she was old and senile when she died and was jiggly. And so she's... So the joke consists of her sitting behind the microphone going, two Jews walk into a bar, and I can't remember. Oh, anyway. And then we went backstage and met Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. Boy, I can tell you, look, no disrespect, because he's 80 years old, still doing what he does. Harvey Korman is the oldest looking man I've ever seen in my life that was still alive.
Yeah.
He's the oldest looking person I've ever seen that wasn't in a casket. I really have to...
And you wonder how both legs could work in unison.
Oh, man.
To get it from point A to point B. Backstage. But like all performers, you know, they live for the applause and the lights, and when they get on stage, all of a sudden, they drop 30 years out their age.
It really is true. It's exactly the way it was with Rickles. And I know you weren't able to get backstage for Rickles, and I've always felt bad about that, but when Clyde and I were able to get backstage for Don Rickles, you know, it's like, hey, come back, Don, I'll see you for a few minutes. So Clyde and I go backstage, we're like, Mr. Rickles, big fans. He's like, well, thanks for coming out. You know, just real...
really need an animal.
Seems very old. Very frail. And, you know, and we're taking our picture with him, and he's like, well, put your arm around me, we'll take a picture. So I'm putting my arm around Don Rickles'
crack.
Seriously, it's like, it's like putting your arm around a hollow pinata. You know what I mean? You're just like, with just the slightest crush, I could kill Don Rickles. And then you realize you'd have a certain amount of fame. You're like, I have my arm around Don Rickles, I'm thinking, you know, this rib cage is just paper. If I just lean ever so, he's just going to collapse into dust. Well, I had to get my name in the papers, you know, and then the photo's over and you realize you've missed your chance. But then Rickles went on stage, man, and he was on. Yeah. I mean, you know, he wasn't doing cartwheels, but I mean, he was very energetic, doing a little dancing, a little singing for an hour and a half. Same thing. Tim Conway looked really good.
Yep.
For 72, 73, he looked really good.
Yep.
I think he's actually sucking Harvey Korman's life force. I think he is actually drinking Harvey Korman's blood or stem cells or plasma or something, because Harvey Korman... God love him. You know, I love that guy. He was still very funny, but he looked old. I mean, old in like tortoise old. But then they went out and they did a solid 90 minutes, no breaks, all scripted.
Yep.
Didn't drop a line, didn't miss a beat. And Louise Duarte was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim and I got to go stand in front of the crowd and go, thank you for coming out, which was terrifying.
Because all you can see...
In front of 3,000 people?
You couldn't see it. The lights made it look like we were looking into a sea of smoke.
Oh, yeah. We walked out on stage, and it was just blinding.
Yeah.
Because we're backstage, and I'm freaking out anyway. You know, I'm like, oh, we just met Tim Conway, Harvey Korman. And then it's like, and they're giving us that whole thing of like, don't touch the microphones. Walk out. Walk back off. Make it quick. You know, and just...
Try not to trip over the cables, and we had like 2 inches to walk.
Oh, that's the other thing. Yeah, we're having to sidle through this like 6-inch opening to get out on stage and off stage. And then you're doing that thing of like, are my pants fine? Am I going to trip? Am I going to... We walk out and said, you can't see anything. You're blinded. You're in front of 3,000 people. And then...
Well, the funny thing is... People are applauding and they have no idea who we are. It's a great feel-good feeling, but people have absolutely no idea who we are.
The best part was the woman coming up to Tim and going, I love Channel 6. Thank you for the tickets.
Oh, you're welcome.
Tim's like, yeah, you're welcome, ma'am. Thanks for watching.
People, you know, think all radio stations and TV stations are on the same floor. So let them
think. What would you say the average age of the Conway Korman show was?
Oh... Mid-40s on up?
Yeah, I think you're aiming low. I mean, I think the average age was probably 55, maybe. Something like that. Are we behind?
Yes. We've Lisa Goddard in 7 minutes.
Oh, for the love of... All right.
But anyone who's prime was in the 70s.
All right. Yeah, no, it's true. And, well, we'll talk a little bit later about this. We've got Michael later on who wants to be our stenographer and so forth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show right here on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Lisa Goddard around the corner. Don't go anywhere. Betting 1,000 in your life. Fantastic.
Woo.
All right. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. See, you don't appreciate that stuff until it's gone. I mean, I know that sounds like a cliche.
All of my modes of transportation are going to hell.
And the best part is that it's not like your transmission. And it's not even that the wipers don't work. It's that they only, it's that the wipers work except when you're trying to use the turn indicator.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. And by fantastic, I mean not so much for you, but for us. Because that's far more entertaining than it is to just quit working, you know what I mean? And then your bike is going all to hell, which
yeah,
is
I'm
great.
Still second, third gear, but I rode it today.
Oh, man. I just, real quick, well, I'll finish this story once we brought Lisa Goddard on the air. Thank you. That way she doesn't think we're ignoring her. Lisa Goddard from The Hill, CNN radio correspondent. How are you, sister?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey. How are you?
Doing well.
Well is a relative statement today.
Isn't it always, though?
It really is. So Sarah was driving her car, just so you're up to speed here. This is a little previously in the Rick Emerson Show. So you're caught up. So we were talking about this so you don't feel left out. Sarah was driving her car this week into a city called Bremerton, which is sort of by Seattle, which is a couple hours north of here. And she's driving her car. Her headlights don't work. Only her high beams work. And her windshield wipers stop working anytime she uses the turn indicator. So,
and my windshield wipers only work when I have my high beams on. It was ridiculous.
Which would be fine, except it is, in fact, mid-November, which means that it rains 23 hours a day, 7 days a week here. So she's sort of driving a car as designed by Rube Goldberg today.
I was going to say, or did you personally make this car?
it's with from a popular mechanics diagram.
Exactly.
From soup cans you find around the house. It's fantastic. That, and then we were talking about bike mishaps, and not to drag you into our personal whatever, but so then your bike, what, it's stuck in third gear?
Yeah, my other mode of transportation is stuck in its hardest gear, my bike.
That's fantastic.
And I live on the top of a hill.
Excellent.
So it's going to be fun.
And so then what happened with me is, and it's actually back to running today, but I didn't even kvetch about this the other day, because it was one of those days where I was in such a bad mood about it, I didn't even want to bring it up. But I left, and I got to tell you this. It's not like we live in Wisconsin or something, but I do have to tell you that it gets pretty cold here in November and December. I mean, it's not like Utah cold, but it's, I mean, you do walk outside.
Give me a temperature.
What's that?
Give me a temperature. What are we talking about?
I mean, it gets down to the 40s, the 30s.
Oh.
I mean, all right, look, there's no need to be mean about it.
Openly mocking. I'm sorry.
Now, look, I've lived in places where it was really just, it really was orifice-clenchingly cold. I have lived in those places. I am not saying it's that cold now, but by the same token, maybe not as cold as where some people live. But, I mean, like 39 degrees, 40 degrees, it's not bikini weather. And so it's bad enough. I mean, there's this pain that happens, too, when you walk out the front door, and especially because I got this new car, and the car's got the heated seats. It's got the ass-warming seats, and it's so difficult to walk by the car to the bicycle, because it's like the car is a siren song. You know what I mean? And it's, come get in the car. It's climate-controlled. And I have to walk by it and get on the bike. I got to get up 20 minutes earlier than I normally would, put on all my rain gear, put on all my, my bicycle wear. And I mean, and so you're already kind of cranky when you leave the house. I get on the bike. I roll down the street. This is what happens on Friday. I get about a block from my house, and I have neglected to tuck one of my shoelaces incorrectly. I'm about a block away from the house, and there's that sort of clunk, and I look down. My right foot has just become completely entangled in the gears. My shoe is about 3 inches deep into the gears. I have to stop. I nearly fall over onto the concrete, trying to hobble onto the ground. By the time I extract my shoe out of the gears, the shoelace has been totally destroyed. So I'm already in a bad mood. I continue to drive, and then there's this hill. I swear we'll get the actual news here in a second, but there's this hill about halfway between my house and work. But it's right at the midpoint, and it's a hill that goes, like, straight up, and it's a pretty steep incline. I get about halfway up. What happens? One of the screws that holds my bike rack on in the back comes loose, and the rack jams itself into my wheel and just completely breaks two or three spokes completely, and it's only one of the screws that came off. Meaning, one of the screws is gone, so the rack is, it's impossible for the rack to stay straight. It's just destroyed my tire. The other screw is still on, which means I can't actually remove the rack. So there I am having to walk my bike home from the midpoint, and it's just, and then I get home, and then I have to come here and pay like $1 million for parking and everything. It was just a bad, I feel better having talked about it, though.
You guys are hurting.
No, I'm sure that
these are just our lives, Lisa. It's like this all the time.
I'm sure that the citizens of Baghdad are really sad for us.
I wish I had something good. I haven't had any major transportation accidents or problems lately.
Yeah, well,
but I've had many in my life, but lately, because I subway in most of the time. The metro is my friend.
Well, no, see, and that works really well. I've ridden that subway.
Yeah,
it's very clean, very efficient. Works very, very flawlessly.
Yeah.
So.
You always meet crazy people on our subway too. It's good stuff.
Well, do you always end up next to like the nutcase homeless guy who's preaching about Armageddon and the rapture?
It's usually on the same car. I mean, there's actually not a lot of homeless people. Not as many as there used to be in D.C., and there's not many on the subway, but there's often someone who has something to say to you. You know, and it could be in a business suit. They could be, you know, in a T-shirt and sweats, but they often have something to say.
They always...
They have, usually I like it. Usually they're a little wacky. You know?
They have a secret message from the beyond that you must know about.
Often, you know, the South will rise again was one of the messages I recently had, which I know... I hate bringing that up because I know that feeds into your image of the South, which I don't like... adding anything to.
Now, you're not, but now I know that you've told me this like a jillion times. You're from Ohio or someplace?
You know, apparently last week at some point you said that I was from some shack in the Appalachians.
That doesn't sound like something I'd say.
Yes, exactly. No, I hate to break that image, which you know, the Loretta Lynn plan might have worked out for me, but I'm from just inside the Beltway right here in D.C. from a little town called Annandale.
Annandale.
We call it Actiondale.
So you're not from some, like, hard scrabble, lick skillet type town?
I'll tell you what, we did, you know, no, it was definitely not that kind of town. Sort of very middle class, World War II era kind of subdivision. But you know, I will say the blue collar roots are from... Just we didn't have any money. I had to babysit to pay our light bill.
I was just going to say that even if you didn't come from like a shotgun shack somewhere, that you really ought to create that. If you're picking a new name, you might as well create a new backstory for yourself.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, just do the KFED thing and talk about how you're from the streets, you know, and you had to sling rock early on in the game to keep it real and so forth.
You know, I almost want to do a yo-yo right now, but I'm the whitest girl ever, and I feel like I need to restrain.
Well, you're on the right program for that. We are relentlessly lame and Caucasian on this show.
Excellent.
So, all right. I
was famous, I would have been in trouble for that.
I feel bad. Hold on. There's an engineer in the room who's attempting to speak to me.
Can I work on your computer?
You want to use Tim's mic?
You know what? I'll just move the microphone over here. I'm not able to access the W drive.
Okay. Well, I'll fix that.
Thank you. All right. Is it injured? I would like to...
Thank
you. See, we're breaking the fourth wall here. It's all part of seeing behind the scenes. I would like to note that CBS Radio Portland has a fantastic engineering department, and when we note that something isn't working, they come in and they make it so, and I mean that sincerely and not in an Eddie Haskell kind of way.
You say that to all the girls.
Yes, okay. Let me ask you this. I, in addition to being relentlessly lame, I'm really an ugly American in that I don't really know anything about other countries
Wow, where are we going to go with this? All right.
I'm just saying if they don't carry a lot of cheese whiz in their stores, it's not a place I know much about. And so I know George Bush is Indonesia, and I know that I probably am supposed to care about that, but offhand I couldn't...
Indonesia is very important. You should care about Indonesia.
Indonesia is important to me. Why?
Other than the fact that there have always been, since the naming of that country, a million bad jokes about its name, that's one. The second, though, is because it is the world's most populous Muslim nation, and they also are a nation under tension because within itself. We need Indonesia, or the world basically needs Indonesia to remain stable and also to remain more moderate rather than more violent. And they have some Muslim sects there that are distinctly anti-American, and it's a country to watch for trends in the Islamic world.
Well, and so George, it does seem like, but look, I don't mean to sound overly partisan here, but I'm just saying, if we wish to sort of get people on our side and sort of get people to feel bullish about the United States, it does really seem like sending George W. Bush there, it might not be the wise. Can't we find somebody more popular? Can't we just send Oprah or something? That's a great idea, right? You know, Oprah ought to be our diplomat to the countries we need to get on our side. Because it doesn't really seem like sending George W. Bush over there is really going to do a lot to endear the peoples of those nations to us.
Yeah, you know, definitely. In fact, his stay was much shorter than expected, as you guys know, because of protests there in Indonesia, some very charged protests, and instead he's heading back home via Hawaii.
The best part about this is the protests only happened if you watched CNN. If you watched Fox News, there were no protests.
You're kidding me.
No, I watched Fox News for about an hour, and it was just a glorious visit by our esteemed leader to the developing nation of Indonesia. And it was really like watching one of those 1940s, like, news on the march, newsreels. And, you know, you expected, like, a scratchy Bill Curtis type,
George W. Bush pays a visit to the savages of Indonesia, helping to bring them into the 21st century. Well done, George W. Bush. You make America proud.
You know, that was... It was all went peaceably, according to Fox News.
Well, the difference is we do film most of our protests at a studio in Brooklyn. So it's possible that Fox just couldn't get a stage.
You just film them on the moon landing set.
Yeah, that's exactly pretty much right there. We just bring in some sand, throw it around.
Somebody asked me this question about Robert Gates, who is, that is the guy that Bush...
I saw him in the last hour, as a matter of fact.
And so he is the guy that the Bush is bringing him in. He's Bush's choice to replace Donald Rumsfeld.
That's correct.
And somebody actually asked me this morning. They said, what do you think about that Robert Gates guy? And I just sort of, I did my Homer Simpson slow blink, indicating that I really had nothing. And then I moved on. But, I mean, it doesn't, here's a dumb question. I mean, how much effect does that guy really have on the day-to-day, whether we stay in Iraq or not? I mean, it seems like those decisions are made at a place above Secretary of Defense.
I think he could have a very significant effect. It is definitely not his decision alone to make, especially when you have a changing of defense secretaries and when he hasn't been confirmed yet, much less begun his confirmation hearings. That'll happen in December. But I think he will have an effect. And I suspect that the president already knows where he stands, at least to some degree, or else he wouldn't have picked him.
Is this going to be do we get to see a borking this December?
I'm so sorry. I don't think so. You know, when I saw him, he was just going in to meet with Senator Carl Levin. He's the new Democratic head of the Armed Services Committee. He'll take over in January. And Levin actually voted against Robert Gates when Gates was nominated to be the head of the CIA. That was in the 80s. Voted against him because Gates had a little bit of a hand in the good old Iran-Contra scandal. And in fact, Gates has admitted that he did not really open up, let's say, all of the books on that scandal, and he could have helped more information come to light sooner. He's admitted that, and that's why Carl Levin voted against him before. But I'll have to tell you, today they were joking around. In fact, I got my mic close enough so that I could hear. I thought, you know, you when you see these guys whispering at the photo op, you think they're saying something very important. You know, tell me again what you think about Iraq. What is it? But no, they were talking about this very ugly sculpture that happened to be in that same room. Carl Levin saying that, you know, there was only one because it was essentially so ugly.
All right, then. Yeah. Well, okay. So we'll, so there we go.
Yeah, there you go.
So on that non-scandalous, non-confrontational note, I would just leave you with this thought today. I would leave you that no matter how your day unfolds, no matter how bleak it may be, no matter how your windshield wipers may act up, no matter how your shoe may be destroyed by your bicycle, Lisa Goddard, as you go through this Monday, the 20th of November, 2006, I would like you to remember that no matter how dreary your day may become, you are not Michael Richards, and therefore your day is fantastic. So
I will hold on to that with my very fingernails.
And it's your moment of zen for today. All right, Lisa Goddard, CNN radio correspondent on the Hill. We'll talk to you soon, sister.
All right, great.
All right, there you go. Lisa Goddard from CNN. Fantastic. All right. Well, I have no chance to do the Inquirer thing, which is what I was going to do here. Instead, I'll get a couple of these calls. We'll get Michael in just a second. Rich, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Rick. I was at the Harvey Korman, Tim Conway show.
Yes, sir.
And just as you came out and did your little MC thing, the guy next to me turns to me and says, boy, that guy really dressed up.
Now, look, there is the photograph that was...
Wait, what did you wear?
I had to pimp the station. I wore my AM970 shirt. what are you going to do? It's not like I could wear patent leather shoes and, like, spats and then the AM970 shirt. So I wore my really dark jeans and my Skechers. And my black AM970 shirt.
No, the guy was pretty old, and I think he was just offended that you weren't dressed more formally.
Well, but that's the thing, is it's all relative, because it's hard for me to look good in that situation, because Tim, of course, is dressed in his newsman garb. So Tim's got the tie, he's got the full-on, you know, he's got the suit jacket. I mean, Tim's like rocking the full-on, you know, 1950s Murrow look. And then Corman and Conway are wearing tuxedos. You know, everybody in the half.
Here's like the slacker guy.
Seriously, and I'm all walking out of my T-shirt and jeans. Hey, thanks for coming. Let me scratch my groin. You know, it's like I'm sure that I look like a tool. In fact, you look at the photograph. Tim and I got our picture taken. The guy Royal, who won the front row and backstage, but that guy was just over the moon. He was just doing cartwheels about it. He brought his Blazing Saddle DVD with him. It's always great to see a guy who is a real fan of whatever you're giving away win something. So that guy was all kinds of giddy backstage. But he sent me. I'll
I'll post it later today. He sent me the photo he took of me and Tim flanked by Conway and Corman. Yeah, so there's Conway and Corman in tuxedos, Tim in his, you know, in his suit and tie, and then me, like, in my T-shirt, like, hi, I'm fat and stupid. And just, yeah, no, it was weird. What'd you think of the show?
I thought the show was hysterical, and I was really wasn't sure what to expect. I had seen Carol Burnett as a kid, and, yeah, I thought it was hysterical.
And, I mean, and physical comedy, too, from those guys who were, you know, 73 and 80 respectively. I mean, doing, you know, the stuff that, I mean, that even that Dorf thing, as much as I make fun of it, where he had to lay all the way back and then do the, you know, do those weird sit-ups. I mean, you're 73. That's got to be tough on you.
Yeah, I was laughing despite myself. And, hey, I just wanted to share one other thing. As I walked out of the show, you know, it's kind of like a sea of, you know, old ladies and such. And I saw some kid coming around the corner in a 666 shirt. And I just spontaneously did the devil horn.
Fantastic.
And I yelled, Satan rules! And I kind of looked around and just all these shocked old ladies staring at me.
Yeah, wrong demographic.
Yeah.
Wrong demographic. Yeah, the average age there, I would say, was like pushing 60.
Totally.
Yeah.
But you did a great job. And, yeah, it was a good show.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. Let's see. Let's get Michael. Michael, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
I was just calling if you need a stand-in for mailman Chris. I can do it.
And so what is it now? What do you do during the day?
I do carpet cleaning.
All right. So now is this, so you're able to listen to the radio during the day?
Yep. Have my Walkman on all the time.
All right. And so you would be able, now you're not going to have a, you know, a supervisor or manager, some guy's going to get all up in your face about it.
Nope. I'm my own boss.
Fantastic. All right. And now you listen every day to the show?
Every day.
All right. And so you feel like you'd be able to do like an 11 and a 3?
No problem.
All right. I'll tell you what. I'm going to put you on hold. Scotty will get your information here. We're checking into a couple of the people as well. We may, worst case scenario, we might actually recruit you to at least be like a backup stenographer.
No problem.
So, all right. Michael, thank you so much. I'll put you on hold. Scotty will get your information. Thank you, sir. All right. It's 503-733-2. 970. Rick, just heard your phone call with Lisa Goddard. Oh, boy, the honeymoon's over. What the hell does that mean? It was a perfectly charming phone call, especially when she whispered in a low, seductive voice about Iraq. Let's see. The email about Sarah's car. All right. Well, there's no time to get to this. So, and no time for the inquiry thing. So I'll tell you what, we'll break here. We'll come back with the AM 970. Is it noon already?
It sure is.
Jesus Christ, man. Sound like my grandfather. Where does the time go? All right. Well, hey, take a break. Come back. It's 503-733-2970. Around the corner, Tim Riley is the Ministry of Truth at the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, Clyde Lewis, Jim Roop. Stay there.